Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here today on this call for our third quarter 2018 results presentation. The call will be hosted by our new CEO, Mr. Antonio Coto. We have a full agenda, so today's presentation will be a little bit longer than usual. It will cover four different areas. We will start by giving you a sense of the background behind the recent events leading to the restatement of the financials and the new guidance. We will continue with the business review of the first 9 months of the year. The third area will be the presentation of the key pillars of our new strategic plan, so that you can understand our vision for the future of the company. Finally, the presentation will end with remarks and conclusions. This presentation will last around 30 minutes, and then we will open the Q&A session, allocating some 30 minutes for questions on the phone and addressed via web. We will do our best to cover some of the questions within this call, but if we are unable to do so, please direct them to the IR department, and we will answer all of them as soon as possible. Before getting started, I would like to remind you that this event is being recorded, and it will be available for playback later from our corporate website. I also invite you to review the disclaimer of the document. And now, I hand over to Antonio Coto. Thank you, Antonio.
Good morning. My name is Antonio Coto. I am the CEO of TIER. At the end of August of this year, the board unanimously appointed me as the new CEO of the company and as a member of the board. I'm Spanish, and I have been in the company for more than 30 years, and most of this has been spent in Latin America, where I built a flagship brand from scratch. I'm pleased to be here, and I have been busy since my arrival. This is my first opportunity to engage with you all. I will do my best to answer your questions. As you know, there have also been some other changes to the board over the period. Ana María Llopis recently stepped down as chair. She had announced this intention in April at the AGM, and she still remains on the board. Stéphane Ducharme, as first vice chairman, is currently acting chair. The board also appointed Sergio Díaz as a new board member and member of the Audit and Compliance Committee. Let's now spend a few moments on the relevant fact of October 15. I'm not going to walk you through this slide. You all have the contents from the filing of the relevant fact in terms of the scope and the reasons that are explained in it that led us to restate the financials. This was the result of an internal review, and I can tell you that as of today, I'm not aware of any further issues relating to this. Now, what is much more interesting for you are the results and the future. This is my first call as the CEO of TIER, so please bear with me. My intention is that you leave this call with more clarity on our plans for the future. TIER is facing its toughest test since its listing in 2011, and I've been appointed to lead the company through these stormy waters. I have been in my role for several weeks, and I'm confident that with your support, we can take the necessary actions and return the group to health. I have three objectives on this call today. First, to demonstrate that we are taking all the appropriate measures to stop the decline and put TIER in order. Secondly, to outline all the measures we are taking, both structurally and commercially, to turn the situation around. As you can imagine, a transformation does not happen overnight, and I'm pleased to have the support of our board and our reference shareholder. We have some of the best experience of retail and turnaround around the table. I do hope that, like us, you will be excited by the inherent potential of this company. Finally, I will outline the strategic framework that we'll be implementing to turn the situation around. As you just heard, When I took on this role 2 months ago, as part of my own due diligence, the first thing I did was to undertake an in-depth review and analysis of the business and all the components of the model. As the new CEO, I want to draw a line in the sand with the past and take the steps to rebuild trust for the future. As I look back, it is clear that the company had recently lost some of its focus and was distracted by several acquisitions and corporate moves out of its core business. We allowed prices to drift up in order to protect our profitability and did not properly update our assortment instead of thinking of what is important for our customers. We may have a large portfolio of stores, but we need to change what we put on the shelves if we are to stay relevant and in touch with customers. The truth is, we got left behind. So, from now on, customers will be at the heart of our strategy, and we are going to do whatever is necessary to make this happen. There is huge upside to be had when we deliver what our customers want in the way they want it. It will be a challenging and exciting journey, and I believe that we are building the capabilities to do so. In the meantime, I'm creating a best-in-class management team, combining both the best in-house capabilities with a state-of-the-art talent from the retail sector. And I'm acting quickly to implement a series of corrective measures, short and medium-term actions, to put the house in order and improve performance across the business. I would like now to move on the guidance update. We are having to reconfirm our outlook for this year's financial performance to reflect a normalized and sustainable base adjusted EBITDA. In 2017, we reported adjusted EBITDA of 570 million euros. We have revised this figure by circa of 26.5 million pre-tax due to an overestimation of discounts granted by suppliers, and it carried around 50 million of extraordinary income that cannot be considered as recurrent and therefore should have been excluded from adjusted EBITDA. This led us to a revised adjusted EBITDA figure of 494 million euros for full year 2017. We have guided full year 2018 adjusted EBITDA at between 350 to 400 million euros. The difference versus last year's revised base can be almost equally split between our Spanish and our international businesses, which, as we will explain later, have been severely impacted by extreme currency volatility. First, in Iberia, we saw reduced sales in a mature and competitive market, and we did not manage to adjust our operating costs fast enough. The market is changing, and our competitors have been more agile than us at adapting to it. More importantly, they have been smarter with their investments. However, we invested a lot last year to test various proximity and convenience formats with some excellent findings. In Brazil and Argentina, where we believe we have the right positioning, the climate is equally challenging, and we have faced a huge Forex impact in our financials that has also affected our investment decisions in the region. Acknowledging that our overall situation has changed, our challenge is to be smart in the way we invest our money in LATAM so as to keep our business in good shape while navigating the current macro turbulence in these countries. All this leads us to guide you towards a new adjusted EBITDA figure in the range of between 350 to 400 million euros, which we believe to be the base going forward. This figure does not take into account the new AS 29 adjustment, which although cash neutral, will translate in around 30 million reduction of EBITDA figure, largely compensated by an increase of financial income. This is the hyperinflation adjustment in Argentina. Okay, with this in mind, let me take you through the trading update for the group for the first 9 months of the year. Our consolidated gross sales under banner fell 9% during the first 9 months of the year to 6.9 billion. Like-for-like of sales is actually positive by 2.7%, but the drop is explained by the pronounced weakening of the Argentinian peso and the Brazilian real during the period. Sales were down 2.5% over the first 9 months of the year. A space reduction due to closing or refurbishment of a relevant part of the state plus calendar effect explained the bulk of the decline, minus 2.2% of the total, while like-for-like decreased just slightly by 0.3%. On a positive note, La Plaza and Dian Gou have confirmed their potential, posting like-for-like of circa 8% and 22% respectively, and they have provided a lot of insight that we are going to use going forward. Additionally, our bet on fresh and perishables is yielding good sales figures with growth of 3.5% during the first 9 months of the year. These are not yet at the required scale to offset the decline in sales of ambient products, but they confirm the rationale of our new focus on fresh. If we now look at gross sales in emerging markets, you can see that gross sales in the region were up for the first 9 months, but again heavily impacted by negative Forex. The next result is that we end up the first 9 months of the year with emerging market sales of 2.2 billion euros, down 20.3%. Let me remind you that if we exclude Forex and calendar effect, this is in fact a positive sales growth of 11.5%, including like-for-like of plus 7.3% performance in the period. A normalized adjusted EBITDA for the first 9 months of the year was 308.1 million euros, 281 million euros when we take into consideration the application of the IAS 29 already mentioned and detailed in the appendix for your information, which compares with a figure of 353.3 million for the previous year. Iberia accounted for 17.3 million euros in the decline due to a combination of lower sales and higher operating costs. In emerging markets, a further 27 million euros, primarily driven by the currency effect. In page 13, you can see a breakdown of normalized adjusted EBITDA margins by region and for the group. At group level, the margin fell by 0.1% to 5.4% and 0.4% to 5.1% with the application of the IAS 29, which came into force, as you know, at the end of the Q3, and that we show in the appendix for the sake of clarity. Margin in Iberia, although down by 0.2%, is still holding a healthy 6.3% level, which is above industry standards. This sends a strong message about the future potential of the business once we have redressed the current situation. Let's move on to page 14, which explains the evolution of our CapEx during the period. Our CapEx for the period was 270 million euros. It increased when compared to CapEx investment in the same period last year and represents over three-quarters of the 350 million euros CapEx that is expected for full year 2018. Our CapEx figure for the period was at around 5% of net sales, Most of the CapEx was deployed in the refurbishment and remodeling program carried out in Spain. But unfortunately, we didn't quite get the returns we were looking for. However, as I said before, we expect to incorporate learnings from the most successful CapEx initiative, especially those coming from La Plaza and Diango. Our net debt position at the end of September was 1.42 billion euros, compared with 1.1 billion euros the previous year, which leaves our net adjusted debt, which leaves our net debt to adjusted EBITDA ratio for the last 12 months just above 3 times. This leverage is over our target levels. So one of the key aims of our strategic plan, which we will explain shortly, will be to reduce our leverage by the combination of cash maximization initiative plus recovery of our EBITDA. On the positive side, operating cash generation improved versus previous quarters. Additionally, at this challenging time, our board considered that it was also prudent for us to suspend the dividend. Let's move on to the third part of the presentation, which provides some highlights of our new strategic plan. I know this is the most anticipated part of the presentation, and I'm now going to outline the key highlights of our strategy for the near future, and will explain the rationale for our expected growth and profitability. These were recently presented to the board. I want to manage expectations and say that I'm going to keep this description very light touch for obvious confidentiality and competitive reasons, as you can imagine. We have assessed our capabilities requirement to deliver our strategy and focus on customers. We will be bringing in some specific cutting-edge talent from outside to boost our existing teams and therefore drive some fundamental change. As part of this process, we will be making some structural changes in Spain. The new general manager for the country, Faustino Domínguez, will have end-to-end responsibility for the Spanish business, which was not the case before. This will enable any change in the commercial strategy to be implemented more efficiently in the stores, and I'm sure the customers will notice this new dramatic environment. Second, we will improve our commercial proposition as a matter of urgency. What does it mean? Well, it means a radical overhaul of all our existing product ranges, the development of some new hero products, a high-quality own label, and a review of how we take on price competitiveness and promotional strategies. Third, we are going to work more closely with our franchisees to ensure we support them and make sure they have everything they need to succeed, be it technology, training, or advertisement. Fourth, we will continue to remodel our stores, but for the time being, we will restrict the work to those areas that will directly impact our customers' experience in the store and improve profitability. We know that we will be bringing some capabilities in order to accelerate this delivery and the innovation we need to create. We need to quickly become relevant to our customers' needs in today's market. Meanwhile, we are already working with our franchisees to reconnect with them, listen to their needs, and ensure that they are sufficiently incentivized and supported to serve their customers. We intended to work more closely with our suppliers on category management and sharing our customer insights to build, in a collaborative way, the best value proposition to our customers and consumers. As you all know, retail is being shaken up by profound changes in customer behavior and as well as major disruption from online retailers. Fundamental differences exist across retail industries, and food retail is proving its resilience in this time of uncertainty. Proximity and convenience formats are emerging as the winning categories to be in. instead of being in the larger supermarkets and hypermarkets usually located on the outskirts of cities. We believe that our proximity stores format offer the most resilient means to drive growth and profitability over the medium term in the markets where we operate. The growth charts you see on the left of this slide reinforce our model. Convenience and discount are expected to outperform both hypermarkets and supermarkets. For example, in Spain, the former is expected to grow by 6% on an annual basis versus an average of 3% for the others. On the right, you can see our long-term strategic position. We are in the right spot. The market is clearly trying to move towards a model of proximity and convenience, and these are two cornerstones of TIA's DNA. And we think we have the right platform and know-how to beat our competitors in our playground. It is a huge advantage that we intend to leverage. Our footprint of small stores acts as a major barrier to entry for others and will also represent a major strength in the market as online begins to use them as the key last miler distributor. So this is the right growth segment and the right format for us. On the next page, you can see some market analysis showing the shopping habits of time-poor Spanish consumers. As you can see, they are implicitly driven by proximity and convenience. So, to put it simple, we have three major axes. One, we are going to concentrate on our grocery business in Iberia. Two, maintain value and positioning in Brazil and Argentina and remaining open to opportunities. Three, with regard to other assets, we will analyze potential strategic alternatives. We are going to look at other ways of generating value across our portfolio and actively manage the non-core assets. As an example, we are in the process of selling the cash and carry business as it is not of sufficient scale for our business, and I have also recommended to the board to explore strategic alternatives around Clarel, and the board has accepted my recommendations. In Iberia, we are going to transform our value proposition around proximity and fresh at the right value level. How will we win? Well, we are the number three player in the market with a 60% household penetration, and we are the number two retailer in terms of share of wallet, with formats based on key customer missions that offer an easy, pleasant, and efficient shopping experience to our customers. These are strong pillars. We will update our range of fresh and renew our own label proposition with a clear commitment to quality and a differentiated commercial offering. We will use detailed customer research to review our categories and thus develop a customer-centric assortment. Spanish shopping behavior can be summarized into three missions you see here on the left: stocking up, looking for the next meal, and on-the-go eating. This confirms that we need to be focusing on offering our customers a nice, modern store that is as close as possible to their home. We have to stock healthy, fresh products and make the whole experience pleasant and stress-free. Therefore, we will invest to update and refurbish those stores with the highest return potential. We will analyze our store portfolio and geographic footprint. As a result of this, we will potentially close non-performing stores, and we will also open new stores in targeted regions. In the short term, we are designing initiatives to level off the declining trend in sales and sustain EBITDA. On page 25, I want to draw your attention to our most recent and successful prototypes from which we have taken very valuable takeaways. These will form the seeds of our future value propositions. In both cases, you can see that the monthly like-for-like evolution has been very positive. Optimizing value through lower promotional intensity and personalized promotion. We're going to shift our positioning away from the complexity of extreme high-low pricing strategy. This drives customers to stock up in an impersonal way, and we find ourselves out of stock. This is something that our customers have complained about, and we are taking note. We are going to spend more time investing on the shelf in order to put the right products and remove what doesn't sell. We will improve our brand equity while differentiating our offering and increase the perception of value for money. Nowadays, we are in a position to offer a far more tailored and personal promotion program, which is more efficient. By being better at understanding and managing our categories, we can improve where and how we invest and how we price the products. As I mentioned before, an improved operating model will underpin our new proposition. Today's world is all about efficiency. We are reviewing our supply chain management to ensure we optimize our end-to-end operations. We will ensure that our stores are resupplied efficiently and we have to adapt to our customers' ever-changing needs. A key pillar for success is by working closely with our franchisees. We are reviewing how we work with them to ensure that they are incentivized to perform, but also that they have all the support they need to serve their customers. Back to efficiency and leveraging technology, the advent of self-checkout means we can have more space for products and customers can shop more quickly. Loyalty cards capture so much data today that we are in a position to really personalize and tailor our marketing and offers as well as our pricing. Let me remind you that we have 8 million club members in Spain and 80 million globally. Our approach to Portugal is absolutely in parallel to our approach in Spain. We are using the same model, benefiting from lessons learned in our Spanish businesses with regard to opening and refurbishment and some quick win cash generating initiatives to reverse the current negative trend and put the business back on track for growth. In Portugal, we will replicate the learning from Spain in terms of value proposition and profit boosters. We will invest and expand cautiously on a more limited scale than in Spain. In Latin America, we will continue to expand, but the change here is that the growth will be self-funded. We see opportunities to reinforce the model in Brazil by opening new stores in regions where DIA has a winning and profitable model. Again, we'll work to improve the attractiveness of our stores as well as ensuring the fresh food offering is relevant and all the time reducing the stock-out issues that we know is a major source of customer dissatisfaction. Argentina has done well and continues to grow and win market share. But given the macroeconomic environment, we believe it is prudent to be cautious and hold off any major capex in the country until we have a clear view of the environment. We are keen to maintain our number one private label positioning in Argentina, as well as increase our bet on perishables, winery, and beauty products. So, these are the highlights of the strategic plan. Let's now look at how the financials will look when we execute this plan. Our objective is to spend next year transforming the model. 2019 is a year of transition, with a focus on the operational turnaround initiative and the implementation of the new strategic plan. We need to sharpen our commercial model to meet changing customer needs in a very competitive landscape. We need to get this right. We then need to ensure that the operating model is as efficient as possible to support the commercial drive. We have identified another set of short-term measures that are complementary to the transformation of our commercial proposition. They are designed with a realistic implementation plan in order to reverse the current negative trend of the business and maximize profitability and cash flow generation. I will not go into too much detail, but key initiatives include a reset or rationalization of our product range so as to obtain better supplier conditions and reduction of stockouts, and with a focus on key profitable categories of fast-moving consumer goods. A dedicated team with responsibility for the analysis of underperforming stores with a view to identifying turnaround potential. Zero budgeting and cost-cutting initiative at both store and headquarter levels. In 2019, we will contain our deployment of CapEx to below 200 million euros. Once we have done this, we will have a platform for healthy, sustained growth. We will see mid-single-digit top-line growth, with EBITDA starting to turn and grow in 2020, and healthy growth thereafter, benefiting from sales growth and significant operating leverage. CapEx will return to 3.5 to 4% of sales from 2020 to 2023 to roll out the winning formats. These are the main highlights of our strategic plan, and I hope you agree that we are all placed to take advantage of some major behavioral trends going forward. Let me close with my own view. These last few weeks have been a challenging time for everybody, but at the same time, I'm ready to take on this challenge, and I know that DIA has the potential for transformation and for generation good performance. I bring with me into this role some invaluable experience that I look forward to leveraging with my team. We have a great team in place and hopefully some more to come. I would like to thank everyone for their incredible hard work to help me get going in my role, and I now know that we have a long road ahead. I want to be very clear. Our new strategic focus is going to gravitate around customers and the fulfillment of their needs. We have the determination to change whatever is needed in order to serve our customers in a much better way. Our business has great fundamentals, and we are present where we need to be. We also have a great supplier base and franchisee network, and I firmly believe that it is time to build up a solid partnership around our commercial proposition, and together deliver solid and sustainable performance going forward. We have great employees. I firmly believe in meritocracy. I want them to be motivated and empowered to deliver their best and to invest in their careers at DIA. With that in mind, we have started to build up a top-class leadership team and an efficient corporate organization around it. This is a real opportunity to work side by side with our employees, our suppliers, our franchisees, and other key stakeholders in order to create and supply the products today's customers want to buy in an environment that is friendly, fresh, clean, and modern. Everyone at DIA is totally focused on accelerating the rate of sales. We all know that we have to move faster than we have ever moved before. There is a new sense of urgency in the group. We are conscious of the challenging situation that we are in today, partly due to our own mistakes, and understand that we need to be disciplined in capital allocation. The full board and each of its members have offered their full backing to the new strategic plan, and this gives me comfort that we have an excellent platform for the future. At a personal level, I'm fully committed to the delivery of this plan. I will now hand back over to David Peña, who will open the session for Q&A. Thank you for your support.
Well, this is the end of today's presentation, and now we will open the floor to your questions. Operator, please, you may now open the Q&A.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow the signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star one to queue for questions. We'll just pause for a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We'll take our first question from James Anstead. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. That was a very useful presentation. I've got three questions, mostly around the balance sheet, if that's okay. The first one is just to understand, are you seeing any effect at all from suppliers being less willing to extend credit to Dia, given all the adverse publicity in recent months? The first question. Secondly, you've got some significant debt maturities in the next year or so. Are you confident you can meet those from your existing resources? And finally, you've made some restatements to last year's financial reports. Do you now have complete faith in those accounts, or are you still making further checks? Thank you.
Thank you, James, for your questions. To the first one, I can say that we have a healthy business, and it's operating as usual. And I have been talking with a lot of suppliers lately, and I feel that we have the confidence of all of them. As customary, when we are in regular contact with our suppliers, my conversation with them is to mainly how to address the consumer's needs, and my conversations are around how we can join together to better serve our customers. For your second question, if I understood well, is that if we have significant debt maturities in the next year? Yes, we have significant debt maturities for the next year, but we are confident. I think that we have time to address our 2019 debt maturities. Of course, we are following a proactive approach in relation to any upcoming maturities, and we are already studying all of refinancing options. The third question, if I took well note, it was about restatement. As I already explained during the presentation, the restatement was the result of an internal review, and I can tell you that as of today, I'm not aware of any further issues relating to this. I want to be clear.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Tim Attenborough from Santander. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Antonio and David and team. three, if I may. Firstly, I'm sorry I missed the beginning of the call, but I'd just like to go. We were told by your predecessor that at the end of July, like-for-likes in Spain were running at about 3%, an encouraging 3%. So I just need to get a feel of what happened in August and September for this to be dragged back to flat. And you gave some indication of the sales uplifts of remodelings, but it just seems like own label and Dear Market were looking particularly soft. If you just give me some color on that. Secondly, just following up on James's question on the debt maturities, debt at 1.4 billion. I mean, really, where will we be with the year-end net debt to EBITDA covenant of 3.5 times on your revolver facilities? And in June, you said that there was 500 million or more than that unused in those revolvers, undrawn. So where are we now? And do you expect a strong working capital recovery in the fourth quarter and into the year end? And just two more quick ones. It seems that Brazilian like-for-likes were negative, which is an underperformance against Carrefour and CBD and when food inflation looks like it's now positive. Perhaps you could give us some color on that. And just one thing I wanted to just double check on. Can you confirm that the 350 to 400 million full year guidance is ex-IAS 29? So in reality, I think you said that you quoted 30 million lower number would be the new sort of headline rate. I'll leave it there with those four. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Nice to have you here.
Thanks.
Well, you have so many questions. I hope that I have put well in order. The first one, you told that the like-for-like was running as set by my predecessor in July. Well, in fact, in July we saw a very positive like-for-like, an extraordinary positive like-for-like. But unfortunately, August and September came below expectations. In any case, what I can tell you is that we have seen like-for-like in Spain stabilizing during the Q3. And I also can say to you that La Plaza and Diango performing very well, and they have posted a very healthy like-for-like that I showed during my presentation, around 8 and 22% respectively. For your following question, I can say that factoring in the third quarter is staying at the same level that at the end of the second quarter. So this is around 100 million. And to give you more precise figure, as of September 30, the undrawn amount in of RCF lines was 376 million euros. Well, your next question, it was about Brazil performance. And, well, as you know, we do not report Brazil separately, but nevertheless, I'm happy to give you some color, taking into account that I've been managing that business previously also. I think it's fair to say that, of course, we are facing competitive pressure from the cash and carry competitors, the famous atacarellos that are cash and carries that sells also to final consumers. And this has been coupled with significant macro headwinds in the region. But as you know, we have a very robust business that should be further reinforced in the future. I think the main issue that we want to redress there is that we are having during this year quite a lot more than we would like out of stocks. And this is a major point of customer satisfaction that we have to redress. But we want to continue investing in the region, as I explained during my presentation. And of course, as always, what we need is to be more close to the customers and to be absolutely the most customer-focused company in every market that we are in. Also, you want me to confirm the guidance, and I can confirm you, as I also said in the presentation, that the guidance for next year is 350 to 400 and is ex-IAS 29, hyperinflation new accounting rules in Argentina. Also, I want to remark that as I guided in slide 31, I think it's 31, yes, it's 31, 2019 will be a transition year when we'll focus on optimizing our operating performance. In next year, we are going to sharpen our commercial model and implementing our new strategic plan. And going forward, we expect to see middle single digit top line growth and EBITDA to post healthy growth from 2020 onward. I think I have not missed any of your questions.
Okay, thank you. Just one further. Just with the, can you just confirm, did you say that IAS 29 on a full year basis impact will be about 30 million?
Yes, I confirm you that.
Okay,
you're right.
Thanks. And also, will we be within the net debt to EBITDA covenant of 3.5 times at the year end, or is it too early to give me a view on that?
Well, Tim, I can assure you that as of today, we have not breached any covenant yet. But of course, we know our balance sheet, and we are working to restructure of that. I can assure that in the next covenant test, that is going to be with the closing of next year, we will have renegotiate everything. And it's my commitment to don't breach any covenant in the future.
Okay, I hear you. Thank you very much, Antonio. Cheers.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Tim. Now we'll take the next question from Borja Olcize from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Good luck with it, Antonio. Quick one from me. In your mind, should DIA run its business in Iberia on a lower or a higher margin to that of Mercadona, and why, please?
Sorry, can you repeat the question, please?
Yeah, if, in your view, DIA should run its business in Iberia on a lower or a higher margin to that of Mercadona, and why?
Okay, Borja, I wouldn't like to comment on the margins of my competitors, and I don't know the margin rate that they are going to have also in the future. But as you know, historically, we have posted higher margins than the industry average in Spain. It's true that we have seen also margin deterioration in the past month, but we continue posting healthy margins over the industry standards. And I think this is a strength for us in the future. Do you have any further question?
No, that's it really. Thank you.
Thank you, Borja.
Thank you, Borja. And we'll take the next question from Kedric Lecasbel. Your line's open, please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Antonio and team. Cedric Lecab from Raymond James. Thank you for taking my questions. I have three, actually. The two first ones relating to Spain, the Spanish operations, and the third one relating to letter one. On the first two, the first one would be, what can you take away from your experience in LATAM that you might add to the Spanish business? How could you leverage on your experience there? Is there anything you might learn from LATAM that you could apply to Spain? And a question which is very close to this one, how can you better fight against Lidl and Mercadona stores which are larger in Spain? And in particular, we saw that your private labels were under pressure. So how can you reconcile maybe stronger private labels and profitability targets? And the last question is on letter one. How can letter one's experience help you address the current challenges? And I'd be very interested in knowing a little more about your relationship with them. Has they already influenced the way you run the business and the strategic plan? Can you tell us maybe what they can bring to DIA in the future? Thank you.
Well, thank you, Frederick, for your questions. About how to leverage my experience in LATAM, I can say that what I plan to bring here very quickly is that in Latin America, we are very, very focused on our customers. I like to reinforce, for example, that the Net Promoter Scores in Argentina, and those are public measures, we are the number one retailer, and with a big difference to the next one. So this customer-centric approach is the one that I really want that we have in the rest of our businesses. Also, and you were talking about private label, we also want to focus on private label. I want just to remind that in Argentina, Dia brand is the second brand most sold in all the whole supermarket industry in Argentina, just behind Serenissima, that is the Danone of there, even in front of Coca-Cola. So I want also to have this approach of a good quality with brand equity, private label, and it's what I intend to be here. Of course, those are not done overnight, and you cannot expect to have a completely different private label in the next 3 months, but it's the lines we were going to go. Your second question was about the format of stores versus the one of our competitors that you mentioned. Well, as I already explained, proximity, I think, has proven to be the most resilient format in the full retail industry. And as I showed during the presentation, customers are looking for convenience rather than large supermarkets and hypermarkets at the outskirts of the cities. Overall, for the new mission that are the one growing more, the missions of next meal and on the go, they want to be next to home. So we believe that our proximity stores, together with the new customer commercial model that we are going to put in place, will offer the more resilient means for the future growth and our profitability. So I'm confident on this. Your third question was about Letter One. Well, as you know, Letter One occupies 3 out of the 12 seats on the board. I want to be very clear. They do not run the business. I do. And I'm pleased to have these three fellows retail really, really with deep knowledge of retail on the board alongside with me. And in any question, if you have any question about Letter One, I think I'm not the appropriate person to answer to you, and it's better that you address directly to Letter One.
Thank you, Antonio.
Thank you, Felipe.
Thank you, Cedric. And we'll take the next question from Philip Rosa. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for taking my questions. I will make 3, if I may. So the first one relates to the balance sheet. Okay, so you've skipped paying dividends related to 2018 numbers. You have a quite high financial leverage. Should we assume that during the period of the plan that you give us some clues in this presentation, the company is unlikely to pay any further dividends, okay, so over these next few years? And related with that, should we assume that a capital increase is likely to happen in order to reestablish a little bit your financial leverage, your target to remain an investment grade company, which I think that it's still a goal for the year. So that would be my first question. My second question relates to your target of mid single digit top line growth that you present presented to us. Could you just give us an idea what sort of assumptions you have in terms of like-for-like and space growth? Should we assume that you'll go back to your expansion plans in Argentina, in Brazil, or is this a plan that is mostly backed by like-for-like growth, as I believe that you also said in the presentation, you are going to slow down the expansion pace in emerging markets? And my final question has to do with your you mentioned that your like-for-likes are very high at Diego and La Plaza, which are new models. But after your review of the of the accounting. Can you let us know whether how the EBITDA margin of these new models compares with the classic DM Market and DM Axi? Okay, so it's true that like-for-likes are going very well, but I believe that you also have higher OpEx at the store level. You have to invest. So just could you give us an idea whether the EBITDA margin of these formats, which seem to lead the way of where you are heading, are higher or lower than your core formats? Thank you very much.
Okay, your first question was about dividend policy. And as you know, the board has decided to put dividend on hold for the time being. And if there is any change in this respect, there will be a formal communication to the market, is what I can say about this. Can you repeat, sorry, your second question?
Still related with the balance sheet, I was asking about whether you think you'll need a capital increase in order to reduce the financial leverage of the company for you to be able to be investment grade again. Okay, so I think that's a target of the company. At least in your website, there is this public statement that you want to remain an investment grade. So are you considering a capital increase, or do you think that the sale of Clarel and Max Disquento will help you addressing your ratings?
Okay, thank you, Philip. Well, it does not escape us that the company will operate in a different financing environment than the one that we have been living until now. And this might require a different capital structure. In the event that the board decision around the future capital structure of the company change, this will be communicated to the market accordingly. But we are working on it. Sorry, because I didn't took well note of your questions. Can you repeat your third question, please? Sorry for...
Yes. So for us to try to understand a little bit your guidance of mid-single-digit top-line growth, whether this is more driven by like-for-like growth or space growth. Okay, and my question has to do a little bit, because we are a little bit lost, what are the expansion targets now in emerging markets? Because I believe that 2019... the store openings will be slower, but probably from 2020 you want to resume expansion in LATAM. So I would like to have a sense whether this mid-single-digit top-line growth is more driven by space growth or like-for-like.
Okay. As you know, I said before that next year will be a transition year in which I want to remake our commercial model. And this is going to translate directly for the next year in an increase in like-for-like, is what I expect about this. About emerging markets, I will say that we are going to slow down our openings. I don't think this is going to deteriorate the situation in Argentina, because given the microeconomic situation, most of the actors in the Argentinian market are doing the same, and we have a great growth respect of most of them. So I think we are going to, even with this, we are going to continue to increase our market shares. And about Brazil, we are going to reduce slightly the number of openings in the country. We are going to concentrate more in the regions that we are. We have a stronger model and a more winning model, and we are not going to significantly reduce. What we are going to do is to have a balance and try to that the expansion is absolutely self-funded in those markets.
Okay, thank you, Tony. My last question, just that's a quite easy one. How the EBITDA margin of La Plaza and Diego compares with your core models, the market and the Maxi in Iberia?
Well, we're still in the early stage of the rollout of La Plaza and Diego, and I think it's too early to draw definitive conclusions. What I said during the presentation is that we have a lot of learnings from those two models that we were developing, and we have a lot of insights and a lot of insights mainly about how to address these two missions, that is On the Go and Dinner for Tonight, because you know that our stores mainly were focused in stock up, and is not the mission that is growing. So we have a lot of insight with those stores that we try to apply to also to the net of the network.
Thank you very much, Antonio.
Thank you very much, Felipe, to you.
Thank you, and we'll take the last question from Juan Ross. The line is open. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. I have three very quick ones, as most of my other questions were already answered. First of all, are you guys have an idea if you're going to slow down the COCO to COFO transition? And maybe can you guide us on what level of non-recurring costs will you be incurring this year, next year? Also, I don't know if it could be possible to get an isolated Q3 IAS 29 effect in sales and EBITDA, and maybe what you're expecting for the full year. Finally, you were mentioning that you're going to do a 200 million capex next year. Just to follow up some other questions made already, but you know, it's a big difference on what consensus was expecting. Obviously, there's a lot of changes going on, but only 200 capex, and you are saying that you're still going to grow some stores. And you want to keep reforming stores also in Iberia. So I don't know if you can maybe provide us some more granularity on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Juan. Your first question was about our COFOs and the transition to COCO to COFOs, if I understood well. I would say that I'm not obsessed about the numbers of COCOs and COFOs. I'm obsessed about the quality of the COCOs and the qualities of the FOFOs. So now we are around big numbers, around the same number that we had last year. We will feel comfortable with this number, and what we want to reinforce is to give them the tools to the COFOs, so that can be successful and really serve well to their customers. And so it's focusing on quality, focusing on the relation of the customers. If it's this with through COCOs or through COFOs or SUFOFOs, for me it's exactly the same. The best way to address our customers. Your second question, that it was about the impact, if I remember well, of the IS.
Yeah, correct.
Can you repeat it, please?
Yeah, if you can isolate the IFRS 29 impact for Q3, please.
Okay, thank you. Well, as I have already explained in the presentation, I think that the impact, well, I think not, the impact from IS 29 is 27 million euros at an EBITDA level for the first 9 months. Is the information I provided.
Yeah, I know.
But I want also to point out that this loss is an accounting issue. This loss is more than compensated by a corresponding increase in financial income, leading to a positive impact between both of them of 13.5 million euros at net income level, positive. In terms of the full year impact, we are expecting between 30 to 35 million at the EBITDA level. Again, to be more than compensated at a financial impact level. I know that in Argentina and in Brazil, because of the history, people are very used to this accounting method, but here we have to learn how to deal with it. There is no cash impact. It's just a way to put in the financial statement. But those are the figures. Sorry, and your third question was about the capex, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, The idea behind the plan is that I'm not satisfied with the return of the CapEx overall in Iberia that we put over the table this year. So I don't want to continue doing the same mistakes. What I want in Iberia is to rebuild the value proposition, to rebuild our commercial policy, to make a depth review of the assortment, or pricing strategy, or promotional strategy. And when we build this, to make the rollout of the new models. But I'm not going to put emphasis on the CapEx of Iberia next year. And about Latin America, I explained before that we are going to be more prudent in the developing of the CapEx because of the turbulence of the market, not because of the business. But anyhow, it's not going to be a dramatic slowdown in Brazil at all. That answer your question?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Well, we
thank
now
you for that.
Move.
That's all from the... Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, operator. we now move to the to the section that we are answering questions received on the internet platform. And we start with Patricia Cifuentes at Fidentis. It's about Iberia. Year to date, India has upgraded around 1,000 stores in Spain, which represents 20% of the network. Moreover, at 1.8% on average in the quarter, food inflation is healthy. However, like-for-like growth remains subdued in Iberia. What is happening? What is the sales uplift in the remodeled stores? Have you intensified promotions? Have you identified why the value proposition is not enough to attract Iberian consumers into the stores? How much do you need to invest in terms of CapEx and margin to solve this situation?
Well, as you know, that the competitive backdrop in Spain remains challenging. And it's true that, unfortunately, as I explained before, part of our remodeling effort was less successful than expected. But having said that, there are significant positive learnings from the most successful investments, and especially those coming from La Plaza and Diango, that, as I said before, are recording promising results in terms of like-for-like. I remind that I said 8 and 20% respectively. And what I want is really to take those takeaways from those experiences and to use them as a seed for the future winning model that we want to be focused in building and next year to win the customer. That is, as I repeat, the main focus of what is going to be DIA from now on. In terms of CapEx going forward, that is one part of your question, I can assure you that every single euro that we will invest will be fully monitored to ensure that we will the resort that we require. And also that any single euro in CapEx that we are going to invest is going to be thinking in the customer.
The follow-up question from Patricia is about disposals. Are there any assets that could be seen as available for sale? Which could be the candidates? Clarel, Portugal, some regions in Brazil?
Well, as you know, there is an ongoing process to dispose the group's cash and carries activities. Regarding to other assets, what I recommended to the board yesterday was to analyze strategic alternatives for those assets that are not part of our core. And one of those assets is Clarel. But I want to remind that Clarel is a very profitable and very good business, and they have there is a good market for Clarel in Iberia. However, I want to explore strategic options for it. In the case of any development, of course, I will communicate you as soon as we make any decision.
And the final from Patricia is about the share price. Is the share price weakness affecting anyhow your daily operations? or in your relationship with franchisees, suppliers, or with the customers?
Well, thank you, Patricia, for your question. I can say that there is a completely disconnection between the share price and the day-to-day business. We are running business as usual. We have a healthy business that is operating. Every stores are open. We have great relationship with all suppliers. We are talking about customers and how to fulfill their needs. And we don't feel in the operation anything of the volatility of the share price.
We end today's call with the questions received from Íñigo Egusquiza at Kepler Cheuvreux. First one is, on top of that, of the real impact of Argentina being considered a hyperinflationary economy, what can we expect in terms of adjusted EBITDA by year and after Argentina impact?
Well, I think I have answered this question before, and you have in page 12 of the presentation the impact from the IAS 29, that is the 27 million euros at the EBITDA level for the first 9 months. And I remind also before, but if you were not present, that this loss is more than compensated by an increase in financial income, leading to a positive impact in at the net income level of 13.5 million. You know that those kind of things is because the balance sheet usually are deteriorated when the country have a lot of inflation. And this is a way to reinstall the net worth of the company. If I talk about the full year impact from the IAS 29, We expect at the end of the year to be an impact between 30 and 30 million at the EBITDA level. Again, more than compensate that the financial impact level.
And a follow-up from Íñigo Busquiza is about top management. Changes in top management. What has happened with the chief operating officer, Mr. Armando Sánchez, suspended?
Well, I know that Armando Sánchez was usually with you in this call. What I can say about is that he's in the payroll, but he's not operational at this moment.
Well, and that's the end of today's conference call. Thank you very much for your time today. And I take this opportunity to remind you that our next quarterly release, the full year 2018, is due on 21st of February 2019. Again, thank you very much and have a good day.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening to me so long time. And I would like to have you on board to drive this business and to be very close to the consumers. Thank you very much. See you soon.